Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have someone who has achieved a lot very early in life. Sumit Goswami, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you. Sumit is the MD of Novistra Capital. He was earlier with Eli Global and QX Limited. Sumit, tell me a little bit about your early career.
Absolutely. So I started with the engineering industry. I got a campus offer from Bharatrat Moves Limited, joined them as a service engineer and was working in mines, trying to, you know, support the BML equipment. So that was a very enriching experience. Then I got a chance to work with Tata Steel. Okay. Tata Steel has a division called Tata Timken, which was later overtaken over by Timken. So yeah. I was a part of that, posted in Jamshedpur, working as a sales engineer over there. Had a long stint with them. Mm-hmm. And then moved into telecom. Spent about 16 odd years with telecom.
Okay.
And then got into some of the, you know, operation leaders and CXO role, where I had the chance to, again, to work with many different companies. Mm-hmm. The most important thing that, you know, that I really cherish with whatever I've done till date is the amount of travel that I've managed to do. I've been to many, many countries, been to many, many cultures, I've been exposed to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that very early on in my life has given me, you know, a lot of learning and has actually helped me to, you know, be what I am today. With the amount of travel that, you know, when you see different culture, when you see different people in different societies, you get to know a lot, right? And you mold yourself into an individual who's ready to face any kind of adversities or challenges. Because when you travel, there are a lot of surprises and challenges that get thrown at you. And, you know, you take care of all of that. So that has been an amazing journey. And I'll continue to travel. I love that.
I know. We can talk of travel sometime.
Sure.
Because my wife and I travel very extensively.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's amazing.
And I think I would be... This summer, I think I will cross 85 countries.
Oh, wow.
So, wow. A lot of travel. So let's talk about your roles at Eli Global and QX. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about these, and then we'll come to Novistra.
Absolutely. So QX Global is a UK headquartered business process management organization. Mm-hmm. It has its headquarter in London, and the delivery centers are in different cities in India. The largest one is in Ahmedabad. Then they have one in Baroda, Mumbai, and Noida. About 1,300 odd employees, three business units. The business units focuses on finance and accounting services, recruitment process outsourcing, and accounting for accountants. Okay. The client base is primarily enterprises who work with large, who have large finance and accounting process, and a lot of manual work is done in those processes. So what QX does is QX takes up those manual work, shifts it to a delivery center in India, and the work is done over here. So that is how the company started. When I took over, the agenda was to manage the digital transformation to ensure that the processes that we handle at the delivery centers are automated to a large extent possible. So we launched RPA and many, many other initiatives.
Very interesting. And then after so many years in the corporate sector, from telecom to all the other things that you're doing, you then move to private equity.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's Novistra.
Yes. So, Novistra is actually, Ashutosh, not a private equity firm. Okay. We are a private equity advisory firm.
I see.
So, my private equity stint was with a company called Eli Global.
Okay.
So, Eli Global is a US headquartered PE firm focused on the healthcare sector. Mm-hmm. It's got a large player presence globally with about dozen countries, offices in dozen countries, 8,500 employees, 100 portfolio companies, and amazing stuff that they do in terms of turning around companies that they take over, and making them global leaders. So that was my first private equity experience.
Okay.
I did some, M&A activities with them and got a chance to look at the large canvas of US healthcare, which has got some amazing opportunities to invest in and have strategic partnerships with. So Novistra Capital was started by Ribbon about 10 years back at New York. And today we have offices in the US, in the UK, in London, and two offices in India, Delhi and Bangalore. We have done close to about 70 odd transactions, and we're very, very sector focused. So that's the niche that we bring. Apart from our cross-border capabilities, we do a lot of transactions across US, UK and India.
Okay.
We are a bit market firm, mm-hmm. so we focus on, you know, small and medium sized organizations and help the founders, you know, either raise capital or, you know, make strategic exits, or they're looking at, you know, growing their organization inorganically mm-hmm. in different markets. We also help them do that.
Okay. Very interesting. So, you know, when you are looking at taking a company for a potential investment, which means you're helping a promoter raise money, what are some of the metrics you look for?
I think what is very critical is to look at the, you know, the growth path that they've had. I think that that's very, very important because, you know, there are two kind of mandates that we work in. One is a sell side mandate where a company is looking at, you know, selling or making an exit. And the second is the buy side mandate where a large organization is looking at making two types of acquisitions. One could be a beachhead to get into a new market, or it could be a bolt-on or tuck-in to add to their existing capabilities. So depending on the situation, you know, we have different parameters based on which we decide whether we should take on a mandate or not, or, you know, this is the right company to go for or not. One is, you know, the performance, the financial performance. EBITDA margin has to be double digit. That's very, very critical for us. We don't work with companies which do not have a positive, you know, EBITDA. The growth trajectory should have been there and some differentiation in their product and service offering.
Okay. So, you know, a bit of a generic question. At what stage should a startup entrepreneur start looking for funding?
Wow. So that's a very interesting question. And, you know, a lot of people keep asking this. So for a startup founder to raise money, I think he has to be sure that his product has achieved a market fit.
Okay.
That's very, very critical. Second is he should have reached some amount of validation from the market for the product or the service that he's offering. Without validation, if you go and start raising funds, you want to make a fool of yourself. And, you know, this entire venture capital community is a very closely knit family, right? And people talk, right? So if you expose to this particular community your plan, which is not well thought through, you're going to fall flat later on, right? So try not to raise money early on. Try to build the company on your own through your own reserves as long as possible. Get to a market fit situation. You know, product and market fit should be there. You should have started seeing revenues coming in, which means there is the validation from the market. Only then start looking out for funding.
Very interesting, because, you know, I get very different views.
Sure.
I've also believed that you should bootstrap a company for as long as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But then there are counter views which says raise money as fast as you can.
Yeah. It depends. So, you know, if you want to grow 300%, 400%, you will have to raise money.
Correct.
Because with your own capital, you cannot fund such kind of a growth. Right. So, but you, that is not something which you want. You don't want to, you know, dilute your equity at an early stage, get the capital in and grow at 300-400% and another 4 or 5 years make an exit. Then you should not look at, you know, raising capital. Be bootstrapped, support your company as long as you can, you know, grow it, build a strong team and stabilize your revenues, stabilize your margins, increase your revenues and start, you know, growing. So when you do this, when you have a good story to tell in the market, the venture capital firms will automatically start following you. You don't have to reach out to them. They'll reach out to you.
Okay. Very interesting. So one of the big challenges a lot of startup founders face is governance.
Oh, yeah.
And private equity, when they come in, they are able to provide some good governance practices.
Yes.
Do you also get involved in governance of these companies?
No, we don't. No. We don't. As an advisory firm, we don't get into, you know, the governance of the companies. But what we definitely do is when we are working with founders, we guide them. You know, we give them tips. We tell them what is right and what is wrong, right? Because we have to prepare them to, you know, to either, you know, go and sell their company or raise a private equity funding. So we prep them. But yeah, we don't go beyond that. But that's not our, you know, we are not experts in that, right? And that's not our role.
I understand. So let's talk a little bit about your experience with startups, startup founders. You know, you must have worked with many of them.
Oh, yeah.
My first question is, what is the advantage of having a single founder versus co-founders?
Okay. So this is again another very interesting question that keeps coming up, you know, in different startup forums. So it depends, you know, upon your own choice, whether you want to go solo or you want to, you know, have a co-founder or a partner. Now, many people are, you know, very individualistic in their approach, right? They don't like somebody to, you know, to give them suggestions or control them. They want all the control with themselves. For such an individual, go solo. But it's not going to be an easy journey, because running a startup, growing it, is not an easy journey, right? Correct. You have to really be ready for the long haul. And if you have a partner, it will be much, much easier for you to do that. So I always suggest to startup founders that look for a co-founder, look for a partner. Ensure that there is a synergistic value that the partner brings in. He should be able to complement your skills, and you both should be ready to agree on certain values and principles, and then go forward, you know, and run the journey together. Because it's going to be really arduous and really, really tough, and, you know, not an easy one. Everything is not rosy, what we hear about startups, right? So there are a lot of tough and rough patches that comes across the way. So
it is a very difficult journey.
Oh, it's a very difficult journey.
I agree. So my next question to you is that, again, based on all the people you have worked with and evaluated, what, in your opinion, are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup founders make?
Absolutely. So what I've seen, you know, especially the young generation founders, you know, people who just come out of college and they have that entrepreneurship, you know, bug in them, and they want to do something. They want to achieve success very, very fast, right? They don't want to put it in that hard work. Many a times I feel people have come to me with an idea, some brilliant ideas, and then they say, you know, we want to go and raise funds. I said, for what? Have you done your MVP? I mean, have you proved that your product works? Is there a minimum viable, you know, proposition available? I mean, have you done your product market fit? No. Are you on a full-time job and you're going to support this as a part-time activity? Many people say, yes, this is what I'm going to do till I make money. Come on. Running a company is a full-time job. Yep. You have to be passionate about it. Yep. You have to be completely involved into it. Right? So do not consider this to be a secondary activity of yours. Mm-hmm. It cannot run like that. That is one mistake that I've seen. Second is people, you know, try to take funding too early. Mm-hmm. Not realizing the pitfalls of getting a venture capital firm, you know, on board. Many a times at an early stage of a startup, it does not help. If you really need funds, try and approach your friends and family. Try to get some, you know, angel investors who could also be your guide, you know, an advisor, and an investor in your company. So that in the initial stages can be very, very helpful. Okay. Go and take funding only when you're ready and you have a proper plan.
Okay. Wonderful. So one more question for startups before I move to the next segment.
Sure.
And this is on scaling up.
Yeah.
There seems to be this general worry or concern in a lot of startup founders, maybe a lot of them are being pushed by private equity, on when can they go pan-India.
Okay.
Right. Now, if you're a digital business, there's nothing like a pan-India or global.
Absolutely, yeah.
But a lot of businesses are really brick-and-mortar businesses.
True.
So my question to you is, at what stage should a startup founder start to think of scaling up?
Okay. So, you know, when you have started your business, you must have selected a market.
Yeah.
Right? If you're a brick-and-mortar business, this is the market that I want to first establish. And then, you know, set my... there are some targets that you have set. This is what I want to achieve. There is a market fit that has happened. People are paying you, so you're generating revenues. You know, you have got a team in place. So everything in that particular defined market is working extremely well. This is the time you should start looking at scaling up your business. Try looking at moving out. Moving out, you know, either, you know, across the state or pan India. If you have the capabilities, do that. Don't do it before that, right? Until and unless your product is ready, your team is ready, you have enough processes and systems to scale up, do not move beyond your comfort level.
Okay, interesting. So let's move on. When I was reading about you, I saw some very interesting passions that you have.
Okay.
And one of the things that you're passionate about is driving change.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Give me an example, if it's not confidential,
sure.
on how you drove some change in some organization.
Okay, so this is something, again, you know, in my formative years, when I was working with Timken and then some of the telecom companies, I got to see the leaders doing it, right? And some of them are my role models as well. And I really found that to be very interesting for the company where the change was incorporated. And
yeah,
I could see the results that came out of it. So I've been very passionate about change and transformation. And wherever I've worked, as a operations leader, I've ensured that I bring about some kind of a transformation, either in the way the company is working, or the technology, or the culture, or whatever I can contribute to. When I was working with QX Limited, the company had there are a lot of enterprise clients that the company works with, and there are a lot of manual processes that is involved. So I wanted to bring a change to that. I wanted to see if some amount of automation can be brought in. Can we implement RPA and get things done through automation? We actually offered that as a proposition to the clients in the UK, very large clients in the UK, and they obviously they were very interested and they wanted us to do that.
Right.
Now, when you drive such a technology transformation or a digital transformation initiative in your company, it's just not transformation that is, digital transformation that is required, but you also need to look at the culture.
Correct.
Because with any digital transformation, you have to ensure that your employees are in sync with
Correct.
It. Because there will be a lot of changes in the way you work. Your processes needs to change, right? Your culture needs to change. You will have to drive your mid-level managers to understand what this change is. They have to go and then train their employees. So,
sure.
So there's a whole process that needs to be set in place when you're driving transformation. I was fortunate enough to do that. I set up transformation teams, which was cross-functional. Mid-level managers were a part of the team. Each one of them was given a project to drive transformation. And they did an excellent job.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And you also said you're very passionate about technology.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of technology are you passionate about?
So, while working with telecom companies, I was fortunate enough to have been associated with brands like Nuance Communication. I'm not sure many of you know about what Nuance Communication is all about, but they are the ones
who
invented Siri,
mm-hmm.
right? Siri that you find on Apple phone. They're the market leaders in speech recognition. All the speech recognition applications that you see and use today, whether in mobile phones or telecom networks, somewhere Nuance has contributed to some part of technology to it. So I was fortunate to work with them, and that's when I got very closely associated with technology around speech recognition. I also got to know a little bit about AI. I got a chance to co-found a startup, which was an AI and a machine learning startup, where we used to understand the intent of users while they were using a mobile phone. We used to use that intent, analyze that intent, and deliver it to brands so that they can make use of it.
Wow.
So these were such fascinating subjects to work on,
and
I could see so much of change happening through those small pieces of technology that I really got interested in it. And I've been very, very passionately following AI and machine learning, and I feel there is huge amount of scope available in the country today to implement AI across different industries. Healthcare is definitely one of them, and banking and financial services,
sure.
again, right? So there are many applications that's possible.
So, Sumit, let's move to a few questions for you personally. You did mention that you had a lot of role models.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So my question to you is that over the years, as a professional, as now an advisor, you've done a startup yourself. Have you had any people who've had an influence over you or your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Sure. I think many people, in fact, again, very, very fortunate enough to work with great leaders. But there are a few whom I really consider to be my role models, and I've learned a lot from them. One of them is a gentleman called Mr. Vinod Dasari. He was the managing director of Timken when I joined them. And, being a very junior professional at that particular company at that time, I was fresh out of college, just 1 year of work experience. And then I see a gentleman like, we used to call him Vinny. So a gentleman like Vinny, and, his aura, the way he used to conduct, the way he used to take decisions, bold decisions. He always used to, force us to go and, think big, dream big, dare to dream. And those are some of the stuff that we learned from him. We actually got a chance to do some projects where, we as a company, we were not such a large entity. But then there were RFPs that came out, and we wanted to participate, but because of our size, we were not able to. So Vinnie pushed us, saying, let's dream big, let's go for it. And that is something which I still follow, and I always dream big. I tell my team not to be worried. This seems like a large issue or seems like a large project to be taken, but I think if you have the wherewithal or the the passion to do it, you can do it. So this is something which I learned from Mr. Vinnie Dasari.
Yeah.
Similarly, I had Kumar Ramnathan. He was the CEO of Hutch when I was working with Hutch. Such a sharp gentleman. I mean, he used to play with numbers. I've never seen an individual so sharp and so good with numbers. And at the same time, he was very humble, lots and lots of humility. He'll roam around the office, meet with people, play, have fun with you. Very, very humorous. So, today, if you see in the industries, whether it is manufacturing or IT or, the startups that are coming up, there is a lack of empathy amongst leaders, because leaders are chasing numbers at such a fast pace that sometimes they forget that they also need to take care of their employees.
Right.
That empathetic, the empathy element is missing. I think that needs to be, you need to have that. And this is something which I learned from Kumar. In spite of running such a large organization, being the CEO of Hutch and with lots of employees, lots of issues, he still, he still managed to retain that humor. He was very, very empathetic. He was humble. He had that humility in him. So that's something which I learned from him. And then at Nuance Communication, my boss, a lady called Teresa Bright, she was the head of marketing, head of global marketing, and she taught me that you should always be there with your team in the success or in their failures. You should be with them in those journeys, because both success and failure, require some kind of support, right? They cannot do it alone. There were situations where we had some PR disasters, and she stood by me.
Wow.
She supported me end to end. So again, that was a big thing to learn from her.
Very interesting. So my next question to you is about you. That, given all your experience, what would be three words that describe you?
Sure. The first one is empathy. I believe in that. When I was running my own startup, initially we were chasing numbers, right? We had lots of pressure. The startup was growing, right? And we had to acquire customers. We then started looking for funding outside. While doing all of this, I started neglecting my employees. I was not spending enough time with them. We were not having town halls. But fortunately, I had some advisors, who gave me this piece of advice that, though you're running fast, you're growing fast, be with the team, right? And start taking care of them, right? Try to spend some time with them whenever you're in an office.
Correct.
So I started doing that. So empathy became a very important element of my leadership, mantra or whatever you call it. Second is perseverance. So when you're running a startup, perseverance is
Correct.
Very, very critical.
Correct.
Right. And as I said earlier, startups are not easy to run. It's not an easy journey. It's a long and arduous journey, right? You have to really persevere. You cannot give up. You have to keep running, right? So perseverance is again very, very critical to me, and I really believe in it. And being practical. The third one is practical.
Nice.
So be practical, right? It's good to be emotional at times, but you need to be practical about the decisions that you're taking. Right. It should obviously have a hint of emotion in it, but whenever you take a decision, think about all the practical aspects of it. Right.
Very nice. So my last question to you now, and that's a question on failure.
Sure.
My question is that, we keep failing and we keep learning, yet we don't teach our children that it's okay to fail. We all want them to come first all the time.
Well, absolutely. Right.
So my specific question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes or your failures?
Yeah, I think, when you have been in the industry for 23 years, there have obviously been ups and downs. Mm-hmm. Right. So one or two incidences that really I regret is one was, moving out of a telecom software organization called Megasoft too early for a better, you know, opportunity outside, which had better pay and, you know, perks. I think I should not have done that, right? So my advice to, you know, anybody listening to this is, don't run after money, right? Run after success. Be successful. Money will follow you. Money will chase you. This is one learning that I've had with that episode. The second one is, you know, be with your team. That's very, very, very critical, right? And when I was running my startup, initially I did not do that. So because of my failure to be very, very closely being involved with the team, we started losing a lot of people, right? I was not aware of what is going at the ground level because I was so busy running around, you know, signing up customers, trying to do partnerships, you know, I just forgot what is happening at the ground level. Right. And there was a huge amount of attrition that was taking place. So be with your team, even if you're busy. If you cannot spend time on the weekdays, try and see if you can do some activities with them, you know, on a weekend. Right. That will help you to work with them together. They'll feel involved. Right. And I think this is very, very critical for anybody, whether you're running a startup or you're running an organization or whatever you're doing. You need to be with your team.
Sumit, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you for mine.
Thank you for sharing so openly a lot of your learnings.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you and see you next week.